Every time I clean my glasses, I'm reminded of Eckhart Tolle picking up a glass of water or doing anything at all, as if every moment in his entire life came down to picking up a glass, going like this, putting it in his mouth, and every motion, like every time you lift your fork up to your mouth when you eat, or clean your glasses, or do anything at all, to have that be the only thing that's going on in the whole world. That, just that, cleaning your glasses, taking a step. Yeah. So let's sit quietly for a few minutes after I bundle up. Where is my... the floor. It's keeping the floor warm, but it needs to keep me warm. Thanks, Kathy. You don't have to put it over there. This is good enough. So, feeling your feet on the floor. And dropping your mind, letting it fall into your heart. Judy, could you keep the door open? It really is a little too cold in here. It's just cold. Hold the cold in? Well, anyway, keep the door open. If it holds it in or lets it out, so dropping your mind into your heart. And if you feel to, putting your index finger and your middle finger on that still point, that heart point, that cave point. And just the sense as if you've just arrived here, as if you've just arrived here. So that mind that's going and only going about the past and the future, Byron Katie says, if you want guilt, get a past. If you want fear, get a future. So that mind, just dropping it, erasing it, letting it go. And pretending as if you just arrived here. You just arrived here. You're new here. No past, no future. I'm arriving in every moment. Arriving here, now. Arriving here, now. Taking three breaths, first breath, belly breath all the way up, 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 up to the top, your nose holding it, breathing out with your mouth. Up, up, up. Holding it. One more time, all the way up. And letting it go. So whatever was going on a minute ago, 2 hours ago, this morning, last night, last week, last month, last year, 20 years ago, can you just simply give yourself the gift? It's a gift of allowing this moment to be itself. Like a little quilt that's been balled up and you're just unfurling it. Shaking it out, spreading it out, this moment becomes itself. And as you sit, to notice if you feel like you need to fix or get rid of or change anything at all. Noticing how often or in the mode of trying to match our experience to what we think it should be. So in this moment, bestowing the grace upon yourself of allowing it to simply be it, self. No adornment, nothing to add, nothing to fix, nothing to change. If there's a headache, there's a headache, a knee ache, a backache. Just allowing. Allowing is a beautiful word. Allowing things to be as they are. Allowing thoughts to come and to go. this moment, in this very moment, nothing is wrong. The body is simply being the body. The mind is simply being the mind. It's not wrong. It's just doing what the body and the mind do. The mind thinks one thought after another. The body has an ache, a pain, a contraction, a stiffness, warmth or coolness. Just allowing. And with that allowing comes receiving whatever is here to receive. The sound of the air conditioner, the sense of the feet on the ground, of hand touching hand or hand touching knee. Simple, so simple. Nothing needs to be anything other than what it is. You get your mind's hands off yourself. And then slowly bring yourself back to this moment. So we're going to divide in groups of three now. We're going to divide in groups of three. And what I'd like you to do in these groups of three, each of you will take 5 minutes. And again, this isn't crosstalk. This isn't conversation. This is allowing what's here to be here. What you're doing is speaking about what discovery or insights you've had about yourself and your relationship with food and yourself since you've been here. You had an eating meditation. We had a session this morning, an eating meditation, and you had a community group. So that's a lot to take in. That's a lot of downloading. So let's hear what's coming up for you. Let's hear what you saw, felt, learned, know, that you hadn't seen, felt, learned, or knew. And it could be as simple as, I thought I liked lettuce, but I don't really like lettuce. I thought I wanted that roll, but turns out I really didn't want that roll. Or as Arezou said, I leave the best bites for the last bites. And I see that in the rest of my life. It could be very simple. Very, very simple. It doesn't have to be, wow, big, amazing. But it could be, wow, big and amazing. I don't want to discount anything that's coming up. But as you speak, see if you can get your mind's hands off. Just let yourself see, feel, speak about what's coming up without any kind of filter. I mean, I'm not talking about so therefore be mean, but I am speaking about without any self-judgment. Doing that. All right? Clear? Clear. So, you have 15 minutes. I'll give you maybe 17 minutes, 18 minutes to get into groups and then speak. You can decide who's going to go first. I'll see you soon. So what do you got? How are you doing? I'll start calling on you one by one. I'm happy if you raise your hand, but if you don't, take potluck. Joyce.
Thanks. I really appreciated the opportunities to just really sink into the exercise of both the eating guidelines and watching my fear come up. Oh my gosh, if I eat till 5, what's going to happen afterwards? And then just kind of, well, it'll happen. And then it happened. I felt afraid, and I talked about it in the group, and it just kind of dissolved, and then I wasn't hungry anymore. It was just, it's been really, I've really been appreciating those moments very much.
Good, thank you.
And letting go of, you know, the morning exercise was letting go of anger and blaming others and realizing that all those years I was kind of pushing it out everybody else. I have all this joy and kindness and love just ready to be experiencing. So I'm really excited about that too.
That's great. Good. Okay. Nicole? Ooh, that was me telling myself it was time to come back.
I've been to a lot of retreats and workshops, probably. I bet I've been to more than anybody else here. I don't know. I've read a lot of books. Part of my expectation has been that I'm going to this workshop and I'm going to be healed and fixed. And, intellectually, I know that that isn't how it works, but that engaging in the process over the long term is what has to happen. And so I'm noticing my stubbornness, I guess, about that I have to do the work. And that there isn't some
magic bullet
solution, yeah, handed to me. Because, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Yep, that's how it goes, girls. That's the long and the short of it. If you don't do it, it don't get done. Period. Nobody can do this for you. Nobody. You could be at a feast with the most gorgeous food in the universe and looking at it doesn't mean tasting it. Knowing the word for honey isn't the same as tasting honey. Seeing it in front of you, it ain't the same. I remember when I realized that too, Nicole. I guess it was just a couple of years ago, after decades of spiritual practice and inner work, and I kind of got it. That I knew how to, well, it might have been longer than a couple of years ago, but let's just say 10 years ago, 8 years ago, I knew how to look like I was working really hard. I knew how to be earnest and sincere, and I was incredibly verbal and brainy and could really talk the talk. I could really talk the talk. But then I kind of got it. Oh my God. I have to do the work. And I mean, you can call it work if you want. But it was kind of shocking to realize nobody was going to do this for me. Nobody could give this to me. Nobody could give it to me. It wasn't going to be a sudden, I wasn't going to hear some words and then suddenly all the veils would fall away. It wasn't going to happen. I had to lose my enchantment with what I was talking about this morning, the wounds. I had to be willing to stop climbing into, I liken it to certain costumes. Like if I was in the play King Lear, and Rupert Spira talks about this. You get off the stage and you get home, you no longer have the costumes or you're no longer in the play and you still are acting crazy. And I still realize I was attracted to and attached to the wounds and I did not want to let them go. Because, you know, I realized that my wounds were quite helpful in a lot of ways. They helped me write quite a few books. And also presenting myself as wounded, constantly wounded, kept other people from being threatened by me. I diminished myself first. I cut myself off at the knees first so that I didn't have far to fall if somebody else did it, so that I wasn't expecting too much because there was, and we will talk more about this tomorrow, a basic conclusion underneath all that, Nicole, is a conclusion, a deep-seated belief. And I don't know what yours is. But mine was, I can't do it. Or, I am all alone. I don't matter. I remember, and I know I've told some of you this, when I was taking Dan Brown, the Mahamudra teacher's retreats, and I did a couple of them, and The goal, if you want to call it a goal, was to cross over into the heaven realm called the Dharmakaya. And many people in my retreat look like they were crossing over into the Dharmakaya. They have since uncrossed, but then it looked like they were enlightened and they were crossing into the Dharmakaya. Now, they all really did happen to be the ones that were sitting right in front of Dan with blonde, beachy waves, very young, really big boobs, and just glowing at him. And still, they were crossing over. My friend and I, who went to the retreat together, called them the Stepford Wives. Until the day came when she crossed over, apparently, as she has uncrossed, but nonetheless, she crossed over into the Dharmakaya. And Dan would, and what did that look like? It looked like the trees were moving and the sky was blue and the birds were extra loud and I was one, she was one with everything, not me. And so I remember feeling like when Dan would say, 15 minutes left to cross over into the Dharmakaya. This is your last meditation session. No pressure there. I remember what came up for me is I can't do it. It's not for me. This kind of freedom is not for me. It was a very, very strong identity, I was going to say belief, conclusion, identity. They're all kind of the same. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So it seemed like it was better. It took many more years before I found the work that we're doing now. the conclusion work, the unavoidable but never true conclusions, which, as I said, we'll do more tomorrow. But I just felt like I was doomed. I was doomed. I had been to so many. I mean, Dan Brown's retreat was the 9 gazillionth retreat, spiritual retreat I had been to. I had been to many Tibetan Buddhist retreats, many Vipassana retreats, many Advaita, this is and that. And I just wasn't getting it. So I kept looking for bigger and better teachers or methods or ways to get it. But I didn't quite get it, that if I had a sense of I can't do it, I was never, ever going to get it, because I didn't believe freedom was for me. And so my persona in many of my books has been, I'm incredibly wounded, I'm very messed up, but I do have moments of sanity. Love me for my moments of sanity, and don't be threatened by me because you see how fucked up I am. That was true up until Women, Food, and God. I didn't do that in Women, Food, and God. But I find myself even these days revisiting some of that, that the attachment to being wounded, to not getting it. I don't feel that way anymore, but I can feel valences of it, what I call the off-gassing of the wound. It feels like the off-gassing of that particular wound, that it's better for me to be small and not threaten anybody than to be what I am, which isn't bigger than anybody. It's just simply myself. It's just the way it is. And that I don't need to cut myself off before anybody does it. I don't need to protect my heart from being broken. It's already got pretty much as broken as I think a kid's heart could be when I was growing up. And it was hard for me to just feel that. I might have said that last night, I can't remember. But just to acknowledge the extent of the heartbreak. There it was, there it is, heartbroken, shattered. And also, as a kid, unbearable and impossible to feel. So pushed it down, and yeah, I did say that last night. Became hypervigilant, or this morning, I can't remember, and I could control everything. Nonetheless, believing that I couldn't do it still. Because any kid knows you can't really do that. You really can't do that. And believing that I couldn't while pretending I could, but all the while knowing it was just a matter of time before the next cut off between the next heartbreak. So I kept protecting myself, avoiding heartbreak, while all the while being utterly heartbroken and not letting myself feel it. It's such a relief to feel what's there. It's such a relief to stop pushing the inevitable down. In this book that I just finished, there are many times, because it's my mother and me, multiple conversations and years and situations with my mother and me, and also with this teacher that taught me about the 6 steps, where I go back and forth between understanding and feeling crazed. And that's how it goes. But there's no need to present myself as feeling crazy or wounded so that readers will not be threatened by me. Those who read the book. It's a process to get to these, to get to what you really, really believe about being alive. What you really believe is possible for you. That's part of why we did that last part of the visualization this morning, where you could come up with a symbol or a touchstone for you in full bloom. Because the belief that we're wounded or messed up is something we've taken on. It's something that our personalities believe. But true nature, as some spiritual teachers call it, presence, awake awareness, has never been hurt, is never wounded, can't possibly go away, can't possibly disappear. It can be occluded by what you believe, but it can't be. It's just a fact of life, like the sky gets covered up sometimes by thunderclouds, but it's always behind there. Somebody else? Over on this side of the room, everybody, let's hear. Yeah.
So you're, when you say, this is interesting to me because the idea of not being able to, or identifying too much with the wound, right? So the big thing for me at lunch was this irrational and very pronounced fear when we put the fork down and weren't allowed to eat again. And I've had it around food a little bit in the past. And forgive me for people who've heard my story, but
that's okay. Tell us what you know now that you didn't know. That's what I'd like to hear. I don't need to hear the backstory, but I would like to hear what your discovery was.
I discovered that I have a very pronounced irrational fear around not getting enough food. And but it's also a fear, I think, that shows itself in my relationships as well. But the question that I have for you is that because I can't really seem to find the source of that fear, because I can't find the source of it, maybe it doesn't matter because then I can't hang on to that as my wound. It's like, oh, well, this happened to me, so that's why I'm so fearful. Maybe it doesn't matter. It's just like, okay, you have a lot of fear, you don't know what it's about, but that's it. That's just a fact.
Well, every single being that comes into this world is fearful. Whether they're aware of the fear or not, there's no way when your life depends on other people, and it does, not to be scared. So fear is often at the bottom of many, many situations. You don't have to remember the moment that you first became afraid. It's probably when you were born, or it might have been in the womb. It doesn't matter, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. It's good to be aware of that. I'm scared of not getting enough. If I don't get enough, then what?
I mean, I guess you think I'll die, you know, but Yeah, then what? I don't know.
So I think that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Somebody back there, Lauren, Angie, Rachel, I'm just going to start calling on you. Lauren, yes.
I was recognizing during the visualization that I've been letting go of a lot of fear that's been like simmering around my usual health saga. And I felt it especially pronounced recently when I had my latest CAT scan. And I'm fine, sort of. But, you know, I have cancer. What can I say? But the interesting thing was, though, when I was leaving it, letting it go, what was arising was just what you spoke of just now, which was this awake, I was thinking consciousness, but I guess awareness or whatever, but this sense of bigness and this sense of joy, which is really where I want to be, and which is really where I am,
right,
about life. And that one of my big fears has always been, you know, being sick and not suffering about being sick, but actually suffering or dying. And I just recently feel like I'm not so afraid of that and that it will happen someday. But I really feel like the key for me is to go out and live my life, because just worrying about it, I could, you know, like people say, like you could get hit by a bus tomorrow, you know, and then all that worrying about, you know, the next thing was like a waste. So I just felt that. I really felt it.
That's so great.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. Yeah. All right, Rachel. How are you doing with your wounds and disidentifying from them?
You know, I'm doing okay. I really, well, I was thinking about one of your famous lines, nobody's coming, just simple like that. I feel like the whole thing has been a little bit lighter this retreat. I don't really know why. Like I had a little moment at lunch where I observed that I wanted to like pick up the chicken with my hands and eat it like messy, like an animal. And I can't do that and da da da. And then I noticed the usual script of, like, I'm so uptight. What's wrong with me? I should be brave. You know, just a whole thing. But it was like, softer, and I just noticed it. I've also noticed this retreat, like, I've been a little less rigid about my exercise, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. It just feels a little lighter. So I think I am disidentifying with the whole thing. It's just lighter.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
One more, Angie.
The visualization this morning really caught me too, with what was leaving was my work life. I'm retired now, and all I've ever known is a very restrictive, very intense profession for so many years. that I am finally now feeling what it's like to have a life. It's amazing. I mean, the only way I could leave my work was to potentially go back supplemental or to pick up shifts, and it helped me get out the door. But now that I'm out the door, it's like I don't need to go back to that. This is what I'm living for, to be able to live my life, get back to my creative side, my open side, my free side. And I'm just very excited about it. I get teared up about it. So it's very exciting.
Thank you, Angie. So let's go around the room and everybody say a word. Let's start with you. One word. Yes, you.
Fear.
Excited.
Present.
Light.
Awake.
Ecstatic.
Excited.
Can't hear you.
Excited.
Trustful, if that's a word.
Contemplative.
Relaxed.
Contented.
Hopeful.
Aware.
Hopeful.
Connections.
Hungry.
Gamification.
I didn't hear you, Rona.
Gamification.
I don't know what that means.
I was just thinking, like, a game to me means you have more.
Oh, gain?
Game, like making something into a game.
I see.
Like a lightness of how to do something. You have choices with food and you can get different outcomes.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Curious.
That's so funny. Curious.
Joy.
Freer. Vulnerable.
Released.
And Kathy, you could just shout it out.
Allowing.
All right, everybody. Let's take a minute just of silence. We're going to end. What I would recommend, because it's been a lot, a big day, I would recommend that you just go outside, take a little walk, just be out there. I was out there before when you were speaking in groups of three, and just the wind and the birds and the sun, and just always what is so much better than the pretend universe in my mind. So let's just take a moment of silence together.